Good morning, everyone. My name is Todd Cochran, and I want to welcome you to the Saturday Morning Tech Show. It's bright-eyed and bushy-tail here in Honolulu, 6 a.m. local time. So I only went to bed about 1 o'clock, guys, so I'm I'm running a little slow this morning, but want to welcome our illustrious panel to the show. Up on top, we've got Jeffrey Powers from geekazine.com. Jeffrey, good morning. How are you?
I'm refreshed from a long week in New York City.
Oh, good, good, good. And on the bottom, we've got Rob Greenlee from, well, you're at Zune. So,
yes.
And Zune Insider. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
Doing terrific. Glad to be here again.
And I see by my setup here, I was tardy. I need to make a small change. Why don't, Jeffrey, why don't we start out? Let's tell us a little bit about Blog World.
First of all, I'm just closing a couple programs here because we had a small little hiccup. Just wanted to make sure that didn't get happen again. But my name is Jeffrey Powers, geekazine.com. At geekazine is my Twitter handle. I went to Blog World New Media Expo, New York City, this last week. We left here Madison, Wisconsin on Tuesday, headed over there, got there by Tuesday afternoon, got to check out the first keynote session, where we had Gary Vaynerchuk. We had it was a panel of four, and the rest of the names are escaping me right now. But went there for 3-4 days, stayed at the Hotel Pennsylvania, and I'm going to tell you something. If you've never stayed in New York City, be prepared to stay in a hotel room the size of maybe your bedroom or your bathroom or something like that. So, and no internet access at all.
Oh, yeah.
Unless you go down to the lobby, it's like $3 an hour. So. Yeah. But I got there, had a lot of fun, met a lot of people, had a lot of great food, and it was a great time.
And as you were saying before the show started here, of course, very, very expensive, very typical for New York. And
probably spent about $1,000 in travel and hotel and cab fare and expense, all the expenses. So
yeah, New York's never inexpensive. So, exactly. So I guess the question of the day is, and then when I was watching the tweets and watching the discussion going on. So how is the new media vibe at the show? In other words, how many people were there that were actually non-bloggers, were actually new media people, people that we would know, new people? Because I saw literally no, I saw Blog World and New Media Expo, but I saw nothing. I counted 22 tweets that talked about podcasting specifically, mostly from Rob, from Cliff, from you, and from one other guy. There was four people that were primarily talking new media podcasts. So what was the vibe on the new media side?
We had had a lot of new media people. Not as many podcasters. Mike Rotman from Streaming Garage was there. He did a panel with Paul Colligan and Jamie
Davis.
His last name's escaping me.
Yeah, Jamie Davis.
Davis, yes, from the other vertical. I'm losing it today.
From ProMed. Anyway,
yeah, ProMed. That's it. So met up with them, talked with them for a little bit. Steve Garfield was there, representing the new media space. Chris Perillo was doing his live thing for like. Was it Wednesday and Thursday? We had, as for booths, we had, we had the boys from Jersey or something like that. It was like Jersey TV or something like that. We had a lot of cameras going around. But as for audio podcasting, had a couple people there. Running to Cliff Ravensworth from GSPN. We got to talk for a little while, and it, it, it was not as well represented as I'd like it, liked it to have been, but it did have some representation.
That's interesting because, you know, it's, and even blog posts coming out of the show were few and far between, and it just, it was kind of a weird, you know, normally the Twitter sphere is alive and blasting, and I saw very little info. Rob, did you see anything last week on the show that piqued your interest?
Yeah, I just saw a lot of kind of live streaming stuff. I didn't really see, it's really odd. You would really think that a blogging event would have a lot more blogging activity around it, but maybe that, you know, I can also see where people were, you know, focused on the event and not really blogging.
Right.
I don't know. I think it's kind of a different time for events like that. I think, you know, Todd, you and I think of, you know, these older events where there was just a huge amount of online activity around these kind of things, but I just don't see that stuff happening anymore for some reason. And I'm not quite sure if it's just the changing of the guard. There's new people involved. The old folks aren't, you know, I hate to say the word old folks, but older timers aren't there. And those are the ones that did those things. And I'm just not sure why it's changed, but it definitely has changed. There's this less kind of buzz around the blogging and podcast area, I think, just in a general sense right now.
You know, well, the big thing, let's go ahead, Jeffrey.
The big thing was we didn't have, there was a little amount of representation for the video. If they had a video booth, they were actually doing videos themselves. There wasn't any type of Revision 3 or Twit wasn't there or I represent a tech podcast, so it was I was pretty much the lone wolf in this thing. But then again, they were comparing it to the first Blog World, and they got better numbers than the first Blog World. So they figure it as a rebuilding type thing. Plus, we also had the BEA, the Book Expo Association, which is what they tagged on to, which is how they kept their costs low. And then TechCrunch Disrupt, which I went over there for a little bit, was also happening that week. So a lot of technology people were there. It's just split between two different things, three different things, actually.
So what was the hate and discontent before the show on the Twitter streams about them not using the word podcast? Matter of fact, it appears to be it was not used in any of the session descriptions. I guess that was a non-issue, but you know, I don't know. I just, you know, what was the vendor count, all that stuff?
Vendor count was about 16 booths, that's 16 to 20 booths, somewhere around there.
20 booths? Was
Well, I'm assuming that the booths were a little bit more expensive than.
Wow.
So.
Middle of the week show, too, I thought would keep attendance down. So what do you think they had numbers-wise?
I'd say about 1,000 at the most.
Around 1,000. Well, considering it's in New York, New Jersey, they should have been able to pull easily more than 1,000. We pull 1,000 people to a podcamp. Yeah, a little discerning on my point. You know, we really had to weigh the value in going because, you know, if I'm going to go to a show, I really have to have some ROI. You know, there has to be something that returns, you know, it has to pay for itself. And, I don't know. I don't know if the show would have paid for itself. You know, sometimes we're there to wave the flag and say, hey, we're still in business. We're still alive. And, you know, I just, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I couldn't figure how the average guy who's doing a 9-to-5 job can take 3 days of vacation right before Memorial Day weekend. And it's, to me, it was just a little weird from a when they had it. You know, if they have it on a Friday, Saturday, that's one thing, you know, because people can take a early week and come out for the show. Then on Saturday, those that couldn't can too. So I don't know.
So do we think there's going to be, you know, a bigger event on the West Coast here in the fall?
That's hard to say.
Well, the biggest thing is with East Coast was they had 10 weeks to plan it. It would probably should have been where they said, well, we'll do it next year at this time, give everybody a year to kind of let it sink in. So I think L.A. will be a lot bigger.
Well, it just seems like it's disenfranchising. The people, and it just cracks me up. People in New York say, well, I can't go to Vegas. And it's probably cheaper to fly to Vegas than it is to L.A. And, you know, people have to come from all over the country. So having two shows, from my perspective, you know, when we do a show, it's $15,000. That's mm-hmm. our expense, you know, booth, internet, people, hotels. So to do two shows, to do spend $30,000 for one show on both coasts, it really makes it hard. And I understand maybe why the booth count wasn't as high. And so was it mostly East Coast companies on the they had booths?
Well, let's see, you had. I'm going to go down the line because that's what I remember. You had Social Media Group's booth, and you had MapQuest there. Paperly was there. Groupon was there. Wiley was there. Yahoo was there. Posterous. We had WordPress.com set up a booth. Vanilla, which was one of the sponsors, they had a big booth. Network Solutions also was one of the big sponsors.
That's
so weird. They had a bigger booth. The Girls on Tech, Audible was there. So we had a good range of booths out there, and I got a lot of good interviews, a couple good startups too.
Hmm. Well, I don't know. I guess we'll see. And I know I talked to the organizer and. Probably have him on at some point here in the near future, and we'll see how the show turns out and see what their numbers were. And we have to make a decision on LA. We haven't made one yet, so we'll see, I guess. But well, I hope they had some good sessions. I hope that people got educated on new media, and it wasn't just all blogging and mommy bloggers, and that whole thing is kind of weird too. That's almost in its, they have their own. It's like they're, blogging, and you've got these groups of particular types of genres of bloggers, and they hang pretty tight together. So I mm-hmm. guess I shouldn't be surprised that that is kind of cohesive that way. But I know Perilla was there. I was getting some feedback. I was seeing some stuff, basically a couple of tweets by him. But sessions, how were the sessions? Good?
I didn't get to do much of the sessions. I saw a couple of the audio sessions. Cliff did his session on how he became successful. That was a pretty good session. They did a like I said, I saw the session with Mike and Jamie and Paul on new media that through set-top boxes. That was a pretty good session. A couple sessions. I noticed there were a couple sessions that did get canceled.
Really?
So I don't know if it was because people were late or whatnot. They were early morning sessions. So,
did the how big were the rooms, and what was the attendance like?
So the smaller rooms, probably about 15 to 20 people could have went in there. The
really?
Larger rooms looked like about 50 at the most.
So pretty small rooms then, even.
Yeah.
Huh. Was that just because the convention center wouldn't support bigger rooms?
No, I think it was because of the fact that they knew where their attendance numbers were, and they just made the assumptions that if you have the higher end shows and the lower end shows or sessions, and they planned accordingly, I guess.
Cool. Rob, any thoughts or questions?
Yeah, I'm just curious. So this was a blogging event. I mean, how many of the really big blogging networks were there? I mean, like the Huffington Post or any of the really large blog networks there?
WordPress.com was the only one. I didn't check on this Vanilla. I think this is a new one in the space, but Yahoo was there. That was pretty much it. That I could tell.
Is Vanilla a blogging group, or what is it?
I'm not sure. I didn't get a chance to go over there, so.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll see. I've been waiting for people to do post-show write-ups, and I've seen very little thus far, so hopefully the bloggers that were there will blog it and give us some more insight into it. Well, I'll get a rundown from Jamie here next week. I'll call him and see what he has to say. And
I'll be doing the. I'll have about 10 interviews. When I got back, I instantly uploaded them, so I'll be throwing them up on techpodcast.tv and of course geekazine.com.
Okay, good. Well, we got a lot more to talk about besides Blog World, and even though I think I could probably talk about it for an hour or two. Well, I guess the last thing, I guess, Jeffrey, what was your, was there any aha, oh, I need to do this moment?
As in coming to Blog World?
No, or stuff that you walked away from the show?
Epiphanies, yeah. Biggest epiphany is monetization of websites, and I need to work on that more.
Just that, you know, banners and that type of stuff, or
yeah, to increase the audience and really push what I've got for my shows.
That's interesting. Okay, well, let's go ahead and move into the regular stack of stuff here. Anyway, Rob, good morning. Did you get your car yet?
I did get my Leaf. I got it last Thursday.
You did? Oh, so do tell us about the Leaf and your experience thus far.
Well, it's been a real kind of a different experience. You tend to drive this car quite differently than you drive a gas car because and I heard a really good, kind of a way of thinking about this car is that it's a car with about a 4-gallon gas tank. So it causes you to think about how you drive your car a whole lot differently than you do when you have a 15-gallon gas tank.
That's funny.
So, because, the range on the car is about 100 miles. So as you plan your trips, all your trips have to be a round trip. And if you if you go too far, you're stranded. So you kind of have to plan ahead and make sure that the car has the appropriate charge to it.
Right.
Really, other than that, it's been a wonderful experience. I mean, I think that the car drives very, very well. It's fun to drive, has lots of room inside of it. It's a lot roomier inside than it looks like on the outside. And it drives like a dream, and it's got very advanced technology in it. And that's what, for me, that's what's really exciting about it. I'm really a geek at heart. So I really like the whole whiz bang kind of new way of looking at cars. It's all about kind of your usage and your efficiencies. Right. So, I mean, like in a gas car, you're like, go as fast as you want, push the accelerator down. You're not really kind of concerned too much about your efficiency. Where in this car, that's your primary focus. You're trying to get the most distance out of every charge that you have, and that forces you to be much more cautious on the accelerator. And I have a tendency to drive probably anywhere from 5 to 10 miles an hour slower than I did with my gas car. So I'd say that
just sucks.
Yeah, but that's not because I can't go the same speed. It's because I want to go slower because that will make my range go further.
Right. So
it's just kind of a different mentality that you go into if you get a car like this. You're much more focused on how efficient, I am as I'm driving my car. Where if you got a gas car, you're just, you're just using as much as you want, and it really doesn't, you don't really think about it. So I'd say that's the biggest thing. But as far as charging it, it takes like maybe 2 to 3 hours a night. It's done. It's ready to go. So it's not as big of a change as people would really, really think it would be. But it all gets back to how far you drive your car every day and what kind of places that you're trying to go. And does the car have the range to actually do that consistently? and without too much what they call range anxiety. So it'd be kind of worrying about whether or not you can make it back home again.
So what is the exact range on this thing?
I've been seeing anywhere from about 80 to 100 miles.
Wow.
So
that wouldn't do it for me.
Yeah. My thought on it is that you would think about this car as kind of this is the first one of its kind, right? The battery technologies, I think, are going to get better. How efficiently the car uses that battery is also going to get better.
Right.
And one thing I've been thinking about here lately is that car only has one speed. So, you know, you put it like in drive, and it really doesn't have like a three or four speed kind of a function. It's just like one speed going forward. I've been really thinking a lot about, well, what if this car had a three or four speed kind of transmission in it? Would that be something that would really extend the range on it? And I'm not sure why they didn't do that. But the other thing that they did was they put 16-inch rims on it.
Huh.
Which probably helps that distance too, because the tire spins faster the larger the rim.
Right.
So you probably get a little bit more range from the car because it just has larger wheels. So
hey,
that's just kind of my observation of, you know, I'm really enjoying the car and I'm really happy that I bought it, actually.
Hey, Rob, the guys are saying that you're a lot quieter. I've just cranked your volume up, but if you want to turn your volume up just maybe 15% or so, that would be good. Okay. Well, that's good. So what is your round trip there to the Microsoft offices?
It's about 40 miles.
Oh, so not bad. So you can do some running around and do grocery pickup and stuff like that too then.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a totally a low anxiety kind of thing. Plus, at the Microsoft campus, there are chargers there.
Oh.
So if I ever need to charge, that's no big deal.
Well, that's cool. Well, I'm glad you got it. Did you check it with a radiation monitor?
Actually, it was, I have to say, it was one of the cars that made it off of the island before the earthquake.
Oh, it did. So you so you don't have a car that glows in the dark.
No, I don't. That's right.
All right, good. Well, lots of stuff in the, even though it's a weekend, I'm surprised how much stuff there is here. But I just want to get your guys' take on something that Mark Zuckerberg, I talked about it in my last show. Have you heard about this thing about Mark Zuckerberg and killing what he's eating? Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I heard about it. It's kind of a strange story.
You know, I'm a country boy, and we raised what we didn't go out and, you know, take a knife to the animal's throat. We sent it off to a processing place and let them do that. But, it's kind of weird, yeah? Is it just me? But I just think it's completely bizarre.
Well, I'm just wondering if he was...
why he feels he need to do this. Is it just because he wants to get to his more primal roots, or what's the motivation here?
And he say it's a new personal challenge. He says the only meat I'm eating is from animals I've killed myself. And he tries something new every year. Last year was Chinese. He learns to speak Chinese and dedicates an hour a day to it. So I wonder if he's going through the full process. I wonder if he's killing and cleaning, you know. Interesting.
Well, I have to say, I've actually cut meat completely out of my diet.
So, you know, It's an odd thing. So are you going vegan on us, Rob?
Yeah.
Really?
Boy, I've cut the meat completely out of my diet. It's been 3 weeks now.
So how's that going? I do that once in a while. It's a nice purge. Is this a permanent thing, or are you just taking a break from being a carnivore?
Well, I just
carnivore?
Done a lot of studying about the topic and have come to the conclusion that it's not really very healthy for you to be eating meat if you want to live a long time. So So it's just, I mean, it's okay to have some, but, you know, I just have decided that I'm not going to do it anymore and see what happens. And I've actually lost a lot of weight.
I bet.
And I'm feeling a lot better. So I got nothing to complain. I mean, really, I was actually mostly had cut meat out of my diet for probably about the last year, but it was just like taking that last step, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Who knows? I might.
It's definitely a lifestyle change for sure.
Yeah. Well, I usually take Lent to not do it as a spiritual thing or anything like that, but just to do it. And I actually cut out 3 or 4 years ago. I cut out meat for 40 days to see how I could do it and how it works. Being a musician, I do a lot of traveling around the state. And McDonald's is so easy to go to, but yet you could easily try and find that bag of carrot sticks and have the carrot sticks.
You're going dark once in a while. That's a weird thing, Jeffrey.
Yeah, I noticed that. I wonder why that is.
By the way, I got to ask you, what is the deal with that beard, dude? That thing is like out of control. Are you... I have some sheep shears if you want to, you need to borrow to help, thing is like,
it's going to get longer. It's going to get a lot longer.
Oh my gosh.
You should say there's a video I posted just yesterday. I took a rickshaw down, 10th Avenue from, Pier 94 to the Javits Center. And you should see the video, what's happening when I point the camera right at me as the rickshaw is going down the street.
Oh my gosh. You got some spiritual thing going on with that, or are you going to become an Amish, or what's the story?
No, it's just a look. It's just a look. I mean, how many people have a beard this long?
Not many for perfectly good reason. I can't say it's becoming of you, but it definitely is. You'll definitely have a definite trademark there going on. So,
my favorite thing is all the people that come up and go, "Can I braid your beard?"
Oh my gosh!
it's not to braid length right now, but
okay. I'm sorry. It's just
that's okay.
Wow. All right, next article up, MacBook with Apple inside. What do you think? Intel's saying no way. Yeah, there's rumors on the street that Apple is building their own processor for their MacBooks. They're going to have their own.
It doesn't surprise me that it's their own processor and all their phones. So.
Yeah, but I think that's a big leap, isn't it, to get the get the power they need, and it's one thing to build a processor for a phone, but when you're talking about a multi-layer, high-end, multi-core processor, that's significant money to roll out a processing chip.
That's exactly the reason why they're doing it, so they can make more profit.
Well.
But you get is it more profit? Will a company turn around and say, okay, I'm going to start writing code for a Mac, or will they just kind of go, I write for an Intel processor, I write for an AMD processor, that's a lot of cost right there. Do I pick up that extra cost for a third processor?
Yeah, I don't know, but it's a curious situation. Say there's an A5 processor being tested for the MacBook Air, so maybe it's going to be for select machines. Who knows? But I guess we'll see over time. But I think it's a weird. Well, maybe not. Maybe you're right, Rob. Maybe it's just that little extra margin, And they're not beholden to anyone else either. Now, speaking about the Mac stuff as well, what do you think about this? This Mac Defender issue with the Macs for the first time really being targeted in a big way with malware. And it's that particular software's gotten much more aggressive now. People don't even, all they have to do is click continue instead of putting in their, basically they get the pop up and there's a thing that says continue. They click on that and the malware now owns them versus the where they had to put their password in before and just, you know, kind of do a dumb thing and get it installed. But what is this overdue, or do you think we're going to see more of this?
Well, I think as the Mac platform gets more and more popular, which it is, there's going to be more, you know, of these viruses and the malwares targeted towards it. It's just a matter of, you know, it's just a matter of time. And I think that, you know, this whole discussion, I mean, over the years that the Mac was immune from this stuff was always false. It was just that the hackers weren't really targeting it because it didn't have a big enough number of people for them to make some money off of. So I think it, as it grows, it's going to be more targeted. And I think this is just a reflection of that.
So, Jeffrey, any thoughts now that you've got a Mac about this? You thought you didn't have to buy any antivirus software, yeah?
Technically, I still don't. I actually watched a little bit of what that what the malware was about, and how easily it can be to really remove. Even if you decide, yes, I want to put it on. Yes, I'll put in my password to let the software put it on. And if you've gone that far, the only thing is if you get to the point where it asks for your credit card information and you put that credit card information in there, then you're SOL.
Well, you know, here's the thing, though. You don't have to put the password in anymore. All you got to do is click continue and you're done.
Yeah.
It owns you. But if it's easy to remove, that's good. But, you know, it was interesting to watch the just on the net. Oh, that's false. This is not happening. You know, the pundits were all kind of silenced when Apple finally came out with, you know, their saying, yes, this is an issue, and giving guidance to their tech support people not to help people remove malware. Of course, no one's helped people do that for a long time. So, except for the antivirus companies, which give you instructions and so forth. But,
and that page, the page that you come up across is really a page that you'll also see in Windows. If you're going to a web page. And all of a sudden it pops up. So it's pretty synonymous between both platforms.
Yeah, I heard Linux too. So I heard it was, you know, not just Windows, not just Mac. So I heard it was all platforms as well.
Okay.
Hey, what did you think about Google announcing Google Wallet and their NFC and being able to finally in America? I just can't believe it's taken, you know, as many years. You know, Japanese have been paying for goods with their cell phones for, as long as I can, at least 10 years. So here we've got finally Google's going to make it available with, be able to pay stuff with their cell phones. Overdue? Are you guys looking forward to this? And is this going to make an impact on Windows 7? Is it going to make an impact on Apple, or is think it's just going to take some time?
Yeah, I think it's going to take some time. I mean, I think that there's still a lot of security concerns about this kind of stuff. So,
but Rob, they've been doing this for 10 years in Japan without security issues.
Well, that's a good point. I totally agree with you. I mean, I would like it because I'd like to get rid of my fat wallet.
Yeah.
You know? So, I really would like to see it, but I mean, it is something new for us here. I mean, if it can be secure and there's no concerns, then let's go for it.
Yeah. I think the ability to take your phone and stick it up and then choose your payment method and click in Japan, you don't even have to, choose the payment method. It just goes on. You can have it put right on your cell bill, which, you know, doesn't do you any good if you're trying to get miles or something like that. So I do like the ability of them having it made available so you can put your own credit card in there, or you can charge a virtual card with Google. And so that'll, you know, kind of help people that maybe don't have credit cards. So I think it's huge. We'll see how long it takes these kiosks to start showing. I think you're going to start seeing where you saw them first in Japan was on vending machines and that type of stuff. So I'm sure that's where you'll see it first. But I foresee a day very, very soon where you're at the grocery store or at a little convenience store or getting gas, and you just hold your phone up and You don't have to swipe. You pay via your phone, which, you know, sometimes has its own challenges, but definitely a lot better than, you're right, having to have your wallet and two or three different credit cards in there.
So do you guys know Gary, what the wireless...
Gary's make...
What were you saying? Rob? I mean, Jeffrey?
Gary was making a good point on the chat. He goes, you know, a lot of vendors will have to end up buying new machines, new devices to do that. First of all, you're not gonna get rid of your wallet with this just yet, because you still have to carry around your ID somehow, and you still have to carry around some cash. But it's interesting to see how much we'll have to end up spending to convert to this new type of system, and if people are willing to do that. I know Pepsi is going to be coming out with these social networking vending machines where you can send somebody else a Pepsi or a Mountain Dew or a Diet Pepsi or something like that. They'll also have that, probably that swipe ability to that. And it'll be interesting to see if how it gets adopted and if we can afford it in the United States.
I think in the big cities, it's going to be, I can't imagine not being almost immediate. I just can't imagine vendors, you know, the power in this is so huge. But I've experienced it in Japan. So, you know, waving your phone over something being done, that's big.
So what is the wireless kind of part of this that they're using? It's probably not Bluetooth.
No, they're so using near field communication, NFC.
NFC, okay.
Yeah.
Is that pretty secure, or can that be hacked pretty easily?
I think it's pretty secure.
Is it?
Yeah, like I said, the Japanese have been using it for a while. And, you know, here's the thing that's cool about it is what you're going to be able to do now as a vendor is you're going to be able to immediately target back towards the recipient. You're going to be able to give them a coupon for their next visit. There's going to be incentives that you're going to be able to interact with that phone. Okay, now you get the receipt. So there's a coupon on the back. How many of us remember there's a coupon in the back of the printed receipt? Yeah. Most of us don't. Most of us take that thing and ends up in the trash can.
I don't even collect my receipts anymore.
So, you know, as a vendor, I think it would be, you know, you say, here's your 5% coupon for your next visit of, you know, $100 or more. Yeah. And that gets stored
right in your phone.
Yeah. Right in your phone. So with NFC, Gary's saying, so with NFC, I can send spam. Absolutely. You can spam me back with a coupon or, you know, announcement of a sale or whatever it may be. So, and then people I do business with all the time, I'd be more than happy to take their coupons. They're not giving me any now, you know, so. And there's, you know, certain places we all walk into on a regular basis. At least I do here in Honolulu, so.
Yeah.
We'll see. I just think it'll be big. Now Apple's got to get their act together and get NFC inside the iPhone. But they're saying not this version, but we'll see at WWDC what the announcements are, and hopefully they do. I just can't imagine them being this far behind. Let's talk a little bit here about the announcement on Flickr. Do you guys see the big announcement Flickr made?
No, I haven't.
I don't know why they made this decision but they basically said on their official website that if you, basically, I guess it was to reassure people. Number one, the pictures you put up there are yours. You own them. And I think that was probably in response to someone else selling people's pictures. Number two, they're backed up in multiple locations, so you don't have to worry about them being deleted. If your pro account goes lapse, they're not going to basically delete the photos that you've got up there for pro. And number four, if you delete your account, Flickr is now going to store the photos for up to 90 days after you've deleted them if you decide all of a sudden that you want to bring your photos back. So kind of an interesting spin by Flickr. You know, they've been in around for a long time, and for them to just all of a sudden come out with these very strong bullet points on what their, you know, what their policy is, maybe they are trying to become once again a little more competitive.
Well, the 90 day reactivation, that's definitely a strong point, because then they can, for the next 90 days, they can email you or try and contact you and say, hey, we still have your account if you want to come back. So that's good on their part, just like any other, like I know GoDaddy does that. It's like, hey, your domain expired. You want to re up on that one?
Yeah, or, you got 10 days.
Or anything like that. Yeah.
But anyway, that's the announcement out of Flickr. Now, hey, oh, I got to tell you guys, since the Google TV went down to $179 on Amazon, I went ahead and bought it, and I spent about 2 hours playing with it yesterday. For a better word, pretty rough. It was, you know, I know people have done a lot of write-ups on it, but I really put it through its paces, and I spent a lot of time in the apps. Matter of fact, I tried almost all the apps, and I can say that their apps suck. Only about a half of them worked. The Blip TV one, I could never get the video to play. And I think that maybe has to do something with Blip's continuous degradation in video speed. Their app failed at some points. Tried to watch a movie on Crackle. That was semi-okay. But played around with this thing. But the app situation with the Google TV was piss poor implementation at best.
I still don't understand your problems with Blip TV, though.
It doesn't, you don't get good playback. It sits there and spin. You play for 15 seconds and it stops.
I still don't have that problem.
I just
watched some of the stuff from, because Screaming Garage just came out on Roku. And I watched some of their stuff. All their stuff is up on blip.tv.
Well, I'm telling you, and where I live, it's not a good experience.
Really?
And if it's an issue where I live, it is. But I've got 12 meg down here, and it just doesn't play. Stuff from Blip, it'll play for 15 seconds, and then it sits there and continues to spin. And we get complaints every week for videos that are in our apps that are on use on Blip. People are complaining. We get probably 20-25 emails a week complaining about, hey, I'm trying to watch a show on your Roku app. What is the deal? This thing sits here and continuously buffers, and when we go check the show, yep, they're serving their media from Blip. So, you know, they're not hardly feeding. If you just go ahead and download a show and see how fast it's downloading. So if the file is, if you're not using a real small file size, the download doesn't keep up with the playback speed.
Oh, that might be true. So, yeah, I know. If you're doing 1080p video, they're expecting 10 megabytes per second, and you should really push it down to about 6 or 8 if you're doing 720, because they're going to push it to 720p anyway. That's about 1500 to 2000. That you want to have a good range, so it has decent quality and downloadability.
Well, if you're downloading, the downloads are slower than the actual playback on the websites. If you are, and when you're watching on the Roku and other devices, you're downloading, so that's where they're hitting you. You know, on the web, it's probably fine, but when it comes back to playback on devices where there's actually a download taking place, that's where the issue is. What were you gonna say, Rob?
Yeah, I was just wondering why you would be seeing, or Todd, you'd be seeing a different experience with the download. And I wonder what the CDN is that Blip is using, because it's very possible that the bandwidth to Hawaii for Blip through their CDN may be less or something like that.
Well, it's it's not just here. I've experienced it other places too, and we're getting emails from all across the country. I'm just I refuse. I'm not putting anything on Blip that is critical. I won't do it at this point. They have to figure out, in my opinion, they got to figure out what their speed issue is. It's cheap, it's free, and in my opinion, you get what you pay for with them at this point. And, if people have a good experience, great. I just don't see it.
One thing I'd like to see with the complaints, and you might have, is if you have any complaints from my videos, feel free to forward them to me.
We just get from, from listeners. They're sending in emails. And
but the one thing that I'm kind of curious as to see is if the people end up linking to the original video that they upload to Blip or the converted videos, the 720p converted video, the SD converted video.
Well, when they're playing back, they're not playing back 720. They're playing back SD. When you're on the web, it's a much, much lower reduced, you're not getting an HD video on Blip. To my understanding, you're not, at least from the... Okay. And I might be wrong, but again, I haven't been using them since probably January. So I just went to
a show that's hosted on Blip, that's in my Zune podcast catalog.
Yeah.
And just did a download. It's a video show. It's about 4 to 5 minute video. And I clicked to actually download it. And it came down pretty fast.
Oh, that's good.
So here it seems like it's good, but it sounds like, Todd, you're seeing spotty performance.
Oh, just especially on the Roku, it's horrible.
Hmm.
Let's go ahead and move on here. Hey, let's talk about Microsoft's move to Moffitt. Microsoft is signing a 237,000 square foot space at Moffitt Towers in Sunnyvale, and this is phase one of a development, and they're going to I don't know who they're going to move down there, but you heard anything about this, Rob?
No, it's just, I wouldn't read a lot into it. I think it's just them, expanding down there, and just, the company is growing.
Right.
I mean, it's not staying stagnant. There's a lot of hiring going on right now. There's a lot of expansion going on right now, so... It doesn't surprise me. I mean, if you look at Google and Facebook, they've been building more offices up here in Seattle as well. So it's all these companies are growing and looking for programming talent is what's going on here. Is that there's a battle for coders and programmers right now,
right.
To stay competitive.
They already do have about 500,000 square feet already in Silicon Valley, so this is just adding some new space to what they already have. So that's pretty significant. Hey, over on let's see, let me bring this up. There's a pretty good article on CNET talking. It's basically John Antico. He was Blockbuster's former CEO. And he talks about Netflix and basically, a deal that went sour in 2007 when there was a potential merger. But there's about, it's a pretty long interview with these guys. And it's pretty telling that Blockbuster, they knew they were in a fight in 2005, but really were not able to move quick enough to head, this tsunami that hit them from Netflix. But it's telling. So if you're interested in kind of the backstory on what happened with Blockbuster, this guy tells quite a little bit about what happened in the behind the scenes. It just shows you when a company doesn't move fast enough, how they literally get slaughtered. So, do you guys have any empty Blockbuster buildings in your neighborhood?
Yeah, a few, actually, along with the borders.
Yeah.
I don't have many around me, but I've seen them. That's for sure. There's not a whole lot of activity going on.
The only blockbusters that have closed down here were the ones that were in strip malls. Anything that has their own spot in the city, they're still alive. So it was just, I guess, more consolidation than anything.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Senator Al Franken of Wisconsin,
Minnesota.
Of Minnesota. He has basically asked again of both Apple and Google to require clear and understandable privacy policies for all of their apps and all of their app developers. And this is the second time he's come back to them and asking them about this. So here's the, one thing I have to say about this guy is that, I had my doubts on his viability as a senator, but he has taken some of these companies to task when it comes to this type of stuff. So what do you guys think about, the requirement or him asking Apple and Google to force app developers to have clear and understandable privacy policy in each and every app?
I think it makes some sense.
Well, don't you think go ahead, Rob.
The issue, I think, is, it's twofold. Really, is anybody going to read it?
Right.
And it's just a small percentage of people that really care that much. But it's probably good to get these companies to think about this stuff more and be a little bit more transparent about what they're doing with all of our data.
Well, they haven't been very transparent thus far. They're just doing what they want to do with it, I think, for the bigger part.
Yeah.
Jeffrey, any thoughts?
Well, I definitely think it's a good idea, especially if these companies start taking money. I'm surprised on how many apps start pulling up and saying, "Hey, if you want to buy this or buy that within the application." So we definitely need. I definitely want to have somebody that has an app to have a better structure to their business model. And so I feel a little bit more comfortable. So if there is a problem, I have contact information. If there is a problem, I have understanding of how that problem comes into play. So I think this is a great idea and keeps out the 2-bit, hey, I can make an Apple application. Why don't I just do that and make lots of money?
I think they just need to get to the point where they say, one, we don't sell your data to someone else. Number two, we're not going to target you with information based upon your location and activities you're doing on our app. And, just some of that basic stuff. But I don't think companies are going to be willing to do that. That's the new frontier in, being able to make money against consumers is being, this super high targeting of, what we eat, smell, do, drive, the whole thing. So I just don't.
I think we all want the benefits of having, location-based services,
right,
and being able to correlate those kind of things. But I think there's this gap in the understanding about how we're getting those that we're kind of missing the beat on. And I think this disclosure thing may help bridge that. But I'm not sure that even if they do that's going to bridge people's concerns, because it's like people are very kind of reactionary to things. If they hear that, if it sounds bad, it must be bad kind of a problem here.
Right.
So it's not as simple as just being more transparent. It's just that people have to realize that if they want the benefits of location-based services, they need to be willing to kind of give up some of this privacy in order to get that. So it's kind of a difficult balance. I think we all just need to realize that if you're using a mobile phone today and you have a data plan and that you're using, anything online, that you just need to be a little bit, take a second thought before you do things and you post things and you are doing things online where you're not vulnerable. But you know, you can never really be 100% secure with doing any of this stuff. And I just think we all need to realize that, but also spend a little bit of time to find out, you know, kind of what's going on with all that too.
That's true. I want to show you guys something here. And Jeffrey kind of alluded to spending within apps and buying virtual goods. This is an article that was up on VentureBeat this morning. And it's basically entitled The Battle of the Sexes. It talks about gaming 21 minutes per day for males, 19 minutes for the ladies. And here's the thing that is interesting. Who's buying virtual goods? 69% of males versus 31% of women, where the spending ratio is almost 9-1, where the guys are outspending the gals 9-1. And basically the title of this article is Proving That Men Love to Shop. And, you know, here's the thing that I find. I think this is absolutely true. My wife will not buy something on her iPad. You know, if it's more, she just, you know, I tell you, there's an app for that. She goes, well, it costs 99 cents. I'm like, so? And she just won't buy stuff. So I look at her iPad and she's got a handful of apps and I've got like 60 or 70. So Rob, do you see that with your wife? Does she buy apps or not?
No, she's not buying apps too much. I think it's really interesting, you know, and this also applies a little bit to podcasting too, is that women aren't, you know, engaging in some of these activities as much as you would think they might be. And I'm not really sure why. I mean, it's just kind of how they look at things is quite different. It's the same with, you know, with podcasting too. There's not very many women that actually are into podcasting, whether from a listener perspective or from a content creator perspective. So I think that there's a correlation where women just aren't as interested in the same kind of stuff that we are, I guess.
You think?
Males.
It's true. Absolutely true.
I'm wondering, I'm looking at this article. This is the first time I've heard of it. So I'm just looking through this article. I'm wondering what they're really getting on here, because they talk about virtual goods, then they talk about games. Right. I'm wondering if that is true only to buy an app, not to buy once they start asking you, hey, you can get Mojo or something like that for $20.
And I think that's what they're probably referring to here on virtual goods. But I see it here where they're not, my wife just doesn't buy apps at all, you know? So
yeah, same with mine. She doesn't buy apps at all.
And my kids and me spend more on apps than, you know, my son is the biggest guy. Hey, Dad, it's only $1. Can I have it? You know? And I'm a sucker and I say, oh yeah, okay, we'll load it up. But
it's only $1, right?
Yeah.
it's a little surprising though, because they I remember seeing something about how soap operas are competing against things like Farmville and stuff like that. Huh. So I would guess that that they would be playing Farmville and they'd be getting their farms bettered by spending $10 for something here and there. So that's why I'm a little bit confused about that.
Well, I didn't know that there was still soap operas. I guess I thought that was those had gone the way of the dinosaur.
They're about to, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been a couple of them that have been shut down.
Yeah. One, what was it? All My Children, it's about 100 years old. It survived the Great Depression. It survived everything, and yet it's getting knocked out because of Farmville.
That's interesting. Well, here's a story that's going to interest you, Rob. You know Eric Rice, right?
Yeah.
Well, Eric has been hit with a cease and desist from Spin Magazine.
Oh, really?
Spin Magazine sends cease and desist to Twitter user @Spin. Of course, @Spin is Eric Rice. And I don't know if you know Eric or not, Jeffrey, but, you know, it's funny because Eric's been using Spin as a nickname she's longer than what Twitter's been around. You know, he was, what was that virtual world thing that everyone got all hot into 5 or 6 years ago? Second Life, you know, he was big in Second Life, yeah.
I think it's still operational, isn't it? It's
yeah.
still around.
Yeah. But they said, hey, you're using our trademark. We want our name back. And I basically tweeted to Eric, and I told him to flip him the bird.
and I'm sure that he'd be happy to do that, too.
Knowing Eric, I'm sure he will fight them. But it looks like from a terms of service on Twitter, he's probably going to, you know, he's got a good chance of winning. But if they take him to court, all bets are off, you know?
Yeah.
But they messed with the wrong guy. This is not the guy to go to court with. They will have so much egg on their face. Before it's over, he will, well, I'll help him. We'll tear Spin Magazine apart. From a, you know, I don't know. What do you think? Think about, and he's not using the at Spin name to try to, basically pretend that he's with Spin Magazine.
No, he's not. Yeah.
And
I mean, it's odd. I mean, he's an old time new media guy.
Yeah.
He's got lots of connections in this industry. That's for sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I'd say what's the
price? What's it worth to you?
Eric, from just on principle, won't sell. I'm sure they could come. Well, everyone has their price, but I'm sure if they come with him with some major dollars, but at this point, you know, they didn't go that route. They went with a heavy hand. They said, you're doing trademark and copyright infringement. And,
trademark copyright infringement is when Burger King sued the one guy for creating the Twitter about Burger King Whoppers or something like that a couple of years ago. Spin is a word in the dictionary, and Spin Magazine is their trademark. So he's not impeding on that at all.
Well, app is a word in the dictionary too, and Apple is claiming that as a trademark. So
as we recall, Apple was trying to trademark the word podcasting a few years ago.
That's right. So this isn't, you know, there's lots of words in the dictionary that are trademarked. And it's how you use them. You know, if you use a trademark to try to deceive and there is a issue with someone knowing, okay, so if he was talking about spin content, then yeah, he would have a problem. But you know, what's funny is the Spin Magazine Twitter account has like 80,000 followers, where Eric's Twitter account only has 4,000. So it's not like he's gained a bunch of followers. But be interesting if he fights it. He's got 4 more days to respond to their trademark infringement claims. And you know, Eric, if you, I'll contribute some money to his legal, to his defense fund if he needs it. This kind of stuff is, blows me away. And, just shows you how companies are a little bit out of control.
Yeah. Well, it's all about too much control.
Exactly. It's exactly that. TV networks see key audience erode. Season ends with high viewership finales, but overall trend shows decline in the 18 to 49 group. Fewer young people are watching TV on traditional sets over the past television season. The second consecutive year decline as viewers face a proliferation of ways to watch TV shows. So they had their numbers drop, and this was an article over at the Wall Street Journal. I don't have full access to the article because I don't pay for their digital subscription, but I don't think this should come as any surprise to anyone.
No, but I think if you look at the overall numbers between broadcast and online, it's growing and is higher than it's ever been. So it isn't
right.
Like people are backing away from broadcast content. It's just how they're getting it.
Yeah, it's the method in which they are consuming it. You know, absolutely. Yeah. I think you're right. That
I missed all of last week's shows. Not that I really watched too much TV, but since I was away, so I just caught it 2-3 days later on either Hulu or another service.
Well, you know, we cut the cord here, and what's kind of interesting is I have the over the air HD stuff that's coming from the few stations that. Now, there's quite a few actually here in Honolulu that have an over-the-air signal. So when I was plugging my Google TV in, there wasn't some of those functions to really use that tied in the TV part. But for me, just playing with that and going back and forth, there wasn't someone's ringing.
Yeah, it's my home phone.
So I think from what I saw though, and what really kind of intrigued me was that with a little work, Google TV and a little more content, Google TV could really make an impact against the traditional folks. If you get some more traditional channels into that app or into their app store that work, I think they'd have a chance of revitalizing that thing. So we'll see.
So Todd, what's your thought? I mean, you've used the Roku and now you've used the Google TV. What would you say is the big difference between those two? And which one do you think has the most potential if you look at, you know, how it's structured with the UI and what the content experience is?
From the Roku, from a UI experience, definitely easier and faster. You can move around in the menu system easier. It took me... And I had the Logitech keyboard sitting there, so it took me a little while to figure out how to get from where to, you know, here to there, and a little bit longer than I should have taken. Believe it or not, what took me the longest to find was how to bring up the search bar, and it was right on the keyboard, but I was looking for a button that said search instead of looking for a key that actually did it. Functionality-wise, definitely more functionality with the Google TV. It was cool because I could load up my website. I could subscribe to my RSS feed. It went into a playlist. Their podcast directory, two thumbs down, it sucked. I couldn't find anything. It couldn't find my older shows, couldn't find my new shows. It had all the majors, the top, you know, 50 or 60 shows that are typically seen in directories. So that sucked. The apps in Google TV sometimes work. That experience was not as good as the Roku for sure. But comparing it to Boxy TV, because I've got a Boxy as well, there's definitely more variety on the Boxy because it's easier to get on the device. It doesn't, you know, it's not as expensive. But I think if Google does as they say they're going to do, and they make the Google TV experience the same as your Chrome experience on your Chrome phone, they are going to have a pretty powerful platform. Now, is Apple going to open up the Apple TV and bring apps on board? I don't know. I think that for them is a cash issue. You know, as Rob, as you and I have talked about, same thing with the Xbox. I don't think they're going to completely open that up. It's, you know, it's not as hard to get in, but or actually it is as hard to get in, but they all have their plus and minuses. And the kids sit there with me and we're playing with it we probably played with it for a couple of hours, and there was some stuff I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. But I think right now that if I was to rank them, boy, probably number one would be Roku still. Number two is probably a tie between Boxy and Google TV. And definitely Apple TV is at the bottom just because you only do so much with it.
So which of the platforms would you say is the best on the video podcast or the podcast side?
They all have about the same video quality. I think the Roku, from a playback standpoint, does it better. But the only reason I say that is because I think the Logitech box is a little bit underpowered. And that may be part of the experience issue, is that box just probably needs a little bit more get up and go, and make it more, because we're all used to this at this point. We're all used to having pretty responsive phones. And if the apps on the devices are as responsive as a phone, I think that would be big. Now, Roku is as close to being as responsive as a phone, but it's completely a different UI. It's it's a tree system. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Google TV, you can go sideways. You don't have to go back up the tree to get out. You can go sideways and around. And so from that standpoint, it's more like a computer. But it's going to be curious to see what happens when they update and change the infrastructure over to a Chrome OS, if that's what their plan is, with the Google TV. I'm going to order one of those Chrome OS laptops just to play with it and see, how much in the cloud I really am. But
did you see the XI3 statement last week?
Mm-mm.
XI3, one of the companies we ended up interviewing at CES. They had the little small PC boxes. They came out with a statement last week that they're working with Google to come out with a Chrome version of
those. Those are little modular, sexy computers, yeah?
Yes. And they're going to make Chromium versions of them.
Wow.
So I don't know if that changes your idea, instead of getting a laptop, getting XI3.
That's interesting.
If I was to do it, that's what I would do.
Wow. Well, I want something that's portable, so I see how well it's utilized. That's very interesting that they're going to come out with one of those. And what we're talking about, Rob, is the XI3. I don't know if you've seen it. You just have to do a... Let me see if I can bring it up. They are pretty. They are... These things are... If nothing else, they're sexy.
Yeah. The idea of the XI3 was to put it in between.
Kind of thing?
Hang on, let me...
The idea of the XI3, Rob, was to take the it and put it in the middle of a four office cubicles, and then they had another device that you could hook up to it, and it became four computers for one computer for four people.
Here's I've got it up on your screens right now. You guys can see it.
Modular computer system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's cool about these is they've got a module that you can put on the back of a monitor. So it's basically the computer is, or the XI3 module just attaches to the,
that's interesting.
Yeah, it's it just mounts to the back and you plug it in, and pretty powerful little box considering how small it is. But it's not anything like a full desktop version, but it I could see where this would be pretty awesome from a running Google Chrome OS. So interesting developments by Google for sure when it comes to that stuff. Let me see what I've got in my stack here, guys. Talked about that. We've got that. Oh, let's talk a little bit about the Engadget crew making the bounce from Engadget over to SB Nation. We talked about that. I know SB Nation is rocking the house when it comes to their media. They're doing really well. They got it going on over there, don't they, Rob?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I think, those guys that left Engadget, Joshua and the whole crew there, they've launched a whole new podcast.
I was listening to it last night. I wasn't super, it didn't really catch me real good, but.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be, they actually, when they transferred from Engadget and started this new podcast, their audience went right with them.
Wow.
I mean, I would say that the following of the Engadget podcast has dropped off dramatically.
Huh.
Where this new podcast with the same crew, right, that moved off to this new feed and this new platform, has rocketed up to the, you know, top five, top 10 of the, you know, Zune's podcast directory anyway.
To me, the content in their show, and I listened for a good 45 minutes, I was almost going to sleep. So it must be just that star power, but the content is not, I'm sorry, it just wasn't super compelling to me from a, it's too slow. I mean, they covered like five or six items and just, oh, I was like, oh, come on, guys, move.
Kind of nonsense talk that goes on in that podcast.
Yeah, it's just like, wow.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, they're doing, they got a blog. It's thisismynext.com. Yep. That's the website. And they're building up their next project. And matter of fact, here's the podcast that I was listening to last night. They're definitely not using PowerPress on this website. So this must be, I don't know what they're using here. It doesn't appear that they're using. Is this even a WordPress blog? Let me see if I can see. I don't think so. It might be, but it just doesn't appear to be a WordPress blog. Maybe it's on SB Nation's platform, but yeah, I don't know what this traffic on this website's been, but yeah, they just like moved over here and started, you know, blogging away and writing great content. But I'm going to be watching these guys and see what they do. What do you think they get up their sleeve? You know, they're talking a lot of smack.
Well, I think that they're just trying to create a, you know, a vision for what they were trying to build at the Engadget site. And I think when Engadget got taken over by, you know, by the Huffington Post and that kind of things, I think the culture changed. And they basically want to have more control and be more kind of on the bleeding edge of where technology is going from an editorial as well as kind of the whole personality side of things. And that's why I think all these guys jump together, is that they saw an opportunity to stay on the cutting edge of technology with their blog and their podcasts and all this kind of stuff. They saw a warm place for their wild and crazy kind of way of doing things, and which is popular. It's actually doing very well. I think it's gathering a lot of, you know, audience is my observation, and I think it's succeeding for them. So it's going to be interesting to see what they launch with. I was a little bit surprised that they chose this name, because
I think they say this is temporary place. They say that's their temporary home.
Yeah, it's not a very compelling name or anything, and it's their artwork and the overall presentation of it's been a little bit lackluster, but it also screams of the star power here, that they've been able to build what they have so quickly with the kind of brand that they have. So it'll be interesting to see when they make the next step here, what they're going to be able to achieve, you know, with a much better website, much better brand.
Niall says, we're not trying to be Twitter or Facebook, as in this new thing people are using. He said, we want to be something that is just the evolved version of what we have been doing. So I guess, you know, they were pretty, I guess, they weren't happy with the tools over at Engadget, that the publishing system was difficult. And that just kind of blows me away that, you know, you got a world-class site like Engadget, and then they're having problems with the publishing tools. So, you know, SB Nation's hitting it out of the ballpark on the sports side, and they got a rabid following of sports fans. So it'd be interesting to see what happens with the tech stuff.
Well, I think that the big difference with these guys is their focus on the video side. I think what we're going to see out of them is going to be a lot of kind of cutting edge video. The Engadget show that they did on, you know, it was a live stage kind of show, is kind of unusual.
Right.
It's, and for what I saw on the Zoom platforms, it was very successful concept, and it really plays into a TV experience too. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what they come up with on that side as well. I think that's the most interesting part of it for from my perspective anyway.
But if you look at this too, Rob, you think about now they are not necessarily in Silicon Valley. Some of the guys are in Washington, D.C.
Well, they're back east. They're back in New York.
Yeah. So the question then is, you know, there as you look at with Leo and Twit and being, you know, relatively close to the Valley, and actually not, he's up in San Francisco. Well, that's true. It's close to Valley. You look at Revision 3, largely in the Valley. So access, easy access to startups, tech companies, you know, just really this, you know, that they're tied, you know, you got these two locations that are tied in, and, you know, location has a lot of success to this. So will these guys be able to, you know, the East Coast scene is not as big on a startup size, although that it does have it, but will they be able to pull in, I guess, probably on their sheer star power, probably people will come to them, I would think, I guess. But
I don't think it's as big of an issue for this. They're not really focused on general technology. They're focused on gadgets.
Right.
And those are typically larger companies that have bigger travel budgets. And you know, a lot of those companies do have offices back on the East Coast. So
true.
I'm not so sure that it's as big of an issue for those guys as it would be for like a TechCrunch or somebody like that.
You know, our gadget show that we've started has done pretty well in the beginning. Don is, you know, getting his feet wet. He's on show number 9 at this point, and he's working through the process of, you know, kind of figuring out his format. And we're starting now to get, on a weekly basis, I'm getting 10 or 15 emails, people wanting to send us gadgets to be reviewed on his show. So it definitely attracts, and my show doesn't attract that type of gear being sent. So it definitely is there is some weight in companies wanting, getting additional exposure to their product. And they're more than happy to sometimes send you stuff that they give you, but usually you have to send, you know, the bigger items back. But it is curious how the ecosystem works on the gadget side.
Yeah, it's different.
Yeah, Jeffrey, any thoughts on these guys?
I haven't really had a chance to listen to the show, so I would say if they're starting up and they get a good following from that, then more power to them. Glad to hear about the Gadget Professor too, and the success on that.
Yeah, have you guys watched our Robot Underpants with Langley?
A little bit.
I haven't had a chance yet.
Yeah, it's a different kind of vibe. It's good. It's nice to have a little bit of a, you know, shake and bake, I guess, for a better word to hear. He's a little more edgy and goes out there a little farther than I do in the content and the topicality. So I think it's a good mix. We'll see how that show's growing too. He's only on episode number 3. It'll be episode number 4 come Monday. But just, you know, trying to get these guys disciplined and, you know, my way of show noting and, you know, documenting stuff so we get the equivalent of Google juice out of the show, that's for sure. Well, I think that's all I've got in my stack. You guys, anything specific that popped out at you this week?
No, it's just a holiday weekend. I hope everybody has a great rest of their holiday.
Go ahead, Jeffrey.
I'm good.
Yeah, I think I got the wind is, the trade winds are blowing. You guys can see the, my curtain is blowing over there. I need to close that doggone window. About this time of day is when I start getting it in the face. So the sun has shifted a little bit. Oh my gosh.
You know, the microphone's starting to look like a little disco ball there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I just fixed it. Use my back scratcher to close the window too. So, well, I guess, you know, I guess that's it. And, you know, thanks for coming out and hanging out today. And, Jeffrey, I'd like to hear your private conversations, private thoughts about Blog World Expo. So if you want to, if you want to hang out after I turn the stream off, you're more than welcome to, and you give me the real deal on the, give me a real thoughts okay. that can be said, how should I say it, not for public consumption.
Okay. Yeah, I got a couple minutes, but then I got to get going. But so, yeah, definitely. So,
but everyone that's on the stream, thanks for hanging out with us. We appreciate it. And Rob, thanks for coming out again on this weekend. And of course, Jeffrey too. You can find Jeffrey at geekazine.com. And of course, Rob's behind Zune Insider. And hope anything else cooking, Rob, that you can talk about?
No, just more of the same. I can say. We're just charging ahead here. Looking forward to the Mango release on Windows Phone 7.
Yeah.
Should see some updates to the podcast experience.
Oh, so nice.
Which is always a good thing. And
you got to get me a demo unit, Rob.
You just me too.
Got to go out and bite the bullet, Todd, and actually pick one of these puppies up.
Yeah, I don't need 5 phone bills, though.
Well, actually, this past week we launched a phone on Verizon, so that's actually pretty big news for Windows Phone.
Yeah.
So we're now on all 4 of the U.S. carriers right now.
Well, that's more than Apple can say, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
Of course, we're going to be 3 carriers soon if AT&T has their way.
Well, that's true. I think that deal's a little bit up in the air.
Yeah, it is. And I'd love to see it fail, to be honest with you. Well, everyone, have a great weekend. We'll see you next time. Go around. And those of you in the audience, if you got comments, geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com, and send your comments about the show. We thank you for hanging out with us this Saturday morning. And until next time, everyone, take care and aloha.